This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. That thing Gary Sterngart was talking about, the idea of global superpowers, that's kind of what any talk of Cold War comes down to, isn't it? Where things hang in the balance of power. New York Times national security correspondent David Sanger thinks and writes and reports a whole lot about that. David, it's good to talk to you again.
Great to be back with you, Kai.
What was your gut reaction when this whole thing started happening?
My gut reaction was that while the United States may be feeling as if it does not want to get into what President Obama called a Cold War chessboard, that's still the way Vladimir Putin thinks about the world and operates in it. And so we have to make a decision about whether or not the U.S. wants to play by his rules or play by modern world rules.
All right. So indulge me as I go through the conceit of the broadcast today. It's not a shooting Cold War. It's an economic Cold War now because so much has changed since the end of the 1980s, right? If that's the case, though, what are our weapons?
Our main weapon is the president's favorite non-combatant unit, which is the Treasury Department.
Yeah.
And here you've got a Russian economy that is much more integrated with the West than it was at any point up leading up to the fall of the Berlin Wall. And you've got many, many Russians who are dependent on financial transfers. The difference this time, though, is that the Russians have as many ways to get back, at least at the Europeans, to whom they sell so much gas and oil, as we have to inflict pain on them.
If that's the case, then, what does that do to the domestic calculus economically here? Does it change our budgeting process? Does it change things on the Hill with the White House? What happens?
Well, the president had the unfortunate timing, and this was pure coincidence, of sending up to Capitol Hill a defense budget just before this broke out that would eliminate a lot of old Cold War systems in favor of more money in the places that would seem to be the future. Drones, cyber, special forces, a revived and different kind of Navy to be able to do the Asian pivot. That's probably still the right strategy, but you can imagine at a moment that a old traditional kind of conflict over borders breaks out that everybody who wants to go defend the interests of old ways of spending is now going to have a new argument to do so.
This is kind of a loaded question, but do you think the administration is deluding itself into believing that the president's favorite non-combatant whim of the Treasury Department will actually be effective against President Putin and the Russians?
In this case, the biggest thing the president has going for him is that investors that the Russians desperately need in their oil sector, other energy sectors, they will be all reluctant to come in, particularly if Russia begins nationalizing some European investments in Crimea.
Oh, man, wait for that to happen, right? That's a whole different deal.
It is, but, you know, the Crimean parliament, the Russian parliament have all been discussing that as a possible reaction to sanctions.
If this continues for another, I don't know, 6 months in Ukraine, just to pick a number, do other things get squeezed out of our priorities here?
I think it's possible, but I think it's also possible that if the conflict remains to where it is right now, which is Crimea, it may well fall off the high priority list fairly quickly. Certainly that is Vladimir Putin's bet. I think the bigger cost, Kai, could be that over time, the hope that Russia would help the United States with other conflicts, Syria, Iran, North Korea, or that President Obama's vision of driving the U.S. and Russia together down to much lower levels of nuclear weapons, which would save us a fair bit of money, I think that those are all pretty well gone at this point.
David Sanger, national security correspondent at the New York Times. David, it's always good to talk to you.
Great to be back with you, Kai.